Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Steph on Never Told You, production of iHeartRadio. And it is time for our first feminist movie Friday, and I think it is coming out on Friday.
Ooh.
Of 2023. This one has been much, much requested.
And I blame all of you for my trauma. Kind of like how I yelled at Annie. I blame the people who... I'm just kidding. It was a movie we should have watched, but I'm traumatized. Thank you very much.
It was quite traumatizing. We were talking about Promising Young Woman, and I remember I had been meaning to watch it. I knew it was going to be a rough one. I knew generally how it ended, and I was like preparing myself to watch it, and it was still pretty...
Yeah.
Pretty intense. Rough.
So go ahead and put content warning here. This is a dramatic movie, and it does involve sexual assault, rape, suicide, death, murder.
Yeah.
All of that.
Yeah. And just like a general, again, if you know anybody who's experienced sexual assault or you've been through it, or I mean, even just being like a woman in this world, it's not an easy watch. And we are going to talk about some of this stuff, and I think I'm going to share some personal stuff, but it's not like, I don't think we're going to get like too in-depth. But yeah, it is a rough one. Speaking of, you can see our rape revenge episodes for more about this. A lot of listeners did request this one. So we do take your requests. We have a list. So don't, never fear, never fear.
I'm mad at you, though.
I did want to throw in, I watched She Said, who's not currently a sponsor, but was a sponsor at one time. And it felt very much in the same vibe. I would say it had more of a, like, potentially hopeful ending, but it was... Ooh.
I think that would be more intense for me because it's actually based on a true events. So
yes.
Of course, it also has Carey Mulligan starring in that one. But yeah, I think I haven't watched that. I have to gear up to watch things like this for myself. And I will say at the very front, after watching Promising Young Woman, Annie did give me kind of a heads up. Because that's what I need. This is where I'm like, I do like spoilers for things like this. I still wasn't ready. I did not expect the ending. I had no idea. I just heard that it was not. It doesn't. It does wrap up, but it doesn't, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But because it like put me in that funk, I'm like, all right, now I will watch Turning Red and The Mummy. And I watched it back to back because I was like, I need this immediately. Need to cleanse this mind right now.
I love it. You've got to have those movies. You've got to have those entertainment things you can go to. They're like, oh, I'm in a not good place. I need to get pulled out.
I need something else here.
We are going to spoil it. This is actually a fairly recent movie, even though it feels like it came out 20 years ago, just because the pandemic, it kind of came out at the end of 2020. We are going to spoil it, but I knew how it ended. I had been spoiled on it. I did not realize it was going to be such a... drawn out, brutal thing. But yeah, we will talk about it. But that was like, I knew how it ended. It still hurt. It was still like, oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So let's get into everybody. Yeah. All right. So Promising Young Woman is a 2020, I saw it called thriller. I guess that's what it would be called. It was co-produced, written, and directed by Emerald Fennell, who was with Killing Eve, featuring Carey Mulligan as Cassie, Bo Burnham as Ryan, Clancy Brown as Cassie's dad, Stanley, Jennifer Coolidge as Cassie's mom, Susan, Allison Brie as Madison, Laverne Cox as Gail, Connie Britton as Dean Walker, with short appearances and cameos by Adam Brody, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, Alfred Molina, uncredited, as Jordan Green.
That was weird.
That was kind of, I was kind of like,
this is a big actor. Why?
I know. And Molly Shannon as Nina's mom. It won Best Original Screenplay at the 93rd Oscars, and it was nominated in several other categories, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress for Carey Mulligan, and Best Editing. And the screenplay won several other awards, and it was generally highly reviewed.
Right. So the film follows Cassie, a traumatized woman who dropped out of med school after her best friend Nina Fisher killed herself after being raped. The school never investigated, though it was widely believed fellow student Al Monroe was her assaulter. Cassie now lives with her worried parents, works at a coffee shop with a friend Gail, an owner, I think, and at night she goes to bars and clubs where... this is how it begins. She pretends to be drunk to meet the nice guys. And we should put in here, the nice guys are played by who is truly seen as nice guys in the acting world. I know she did this on purpose by pulling beloved actors who would be seen as nice guys, or at least like, because the McLovin guy. Yeah. McLovin, maybe he wouldn't be the nice guy because we've seen him play that other role, but definitely non-threatening.
Yeah.
Type of guy. And these nice guys rescue her by taking her home and trying to have sex with her. And again, when they rescue, the initial is like they're trying to protect from all of the other fiends. I got you, you're safe, which they say a lot. Despite the fact she's clearly inebriated and cannot consent. But on top of that, gives clear messaging she does not want to have sex, is confused, is not there. Then she reveals that she's actually sober and confronts them. I thought it was actually going to go a step further and that she would kill them.
I did too.
That didn't happen. So.
No, she would just kind of be like, oh, I'm totally sober. And they would be terrified. Like, oh my God.
Right. They look shocked that they just got discovered for their intent.
Yes. So Cassie goes on a date with a past classmate named Ryan, who is now a pediatrician. Doesn't understand why Cassie dropped out, kind of questions her about it. He reveals that Al, the student who is believed to have raped Nina, is getting married. And Cassie starts plotting revenge against him and all of those involved in Nina's rape. So first, she meets up with a one-time friend of Cassie and Nina's, Madison. Cassie gets Madison day drunk, and Madison continues to maintain that Nina wasn't raped, that she was a slut who was drunk half the time, basically. So sort of, yeah, like blaming the victim. It was her fault. Cassie hires a man to take a blackout drunk Madison to a hotel room. Madison can't remember what happens, and she leaves these several upset messages on Cassie's phone that Cassie ignores. Her next target is Dean Walker. Walker had dismissed the case, Nina's case, due to lack of evidence, and while she remembers Al, doesn't remember Nina, and calls the whole thing unfortunate. Cassie tells the dean she had tricked the dean's daughter, Amber, into thinking that Cassie was a makeup artist for this popular band that Amber really likes, and she had dropped Amber off in a dorm room with drunk male students. And panicking, the dean tries to call Amber, but Cassie has Amber's phone. The dean apologizes for not taking any action with Nina, and Cassie reveals she lied and that Amber is safe in a diner.
So while out hunting sleazy men that night, and by the way, at the beginning, we see a small notebook where she tallies scores of getting after these men and puts names down. So, and she calls it a job as a way of doing this, by the way. She runs into Ryan while she's pretending to be drunk, leaving with a dude, and he gets angry with her. They have a moment, and they kind of split. And he also plays the good guy here, saying he's a creep, the dude who's trying to take her home, by the way. Later, Cassie goes to confront Al's lawyer, Jordan Green, who got Nina to drop the charges after essentially harassing. And here he describes how the firm just pretty much, and how lawyers are taught how to dig through social media, used to be trash, to find revealing clothes, drunk pictures, and anything to discredit them and call them a slut, and making sure that they are so ashamed that they will back off suits and back off cases, and that they get money for that.
Yep.
It's really ugly and it's very telling. He says he regrets his action and is taking a break from practicing law because of a nervous breakdown. Something happened. And part of that was the Nina case, because he remembered her clearly. He remembered the what happened, and he knew that she had died by suicide. So there was a lot to this. And he pretty much asked Cassie to hurt him. Like, I want you to. I need to pay for this. And instead, Cassie forgives him, which is something to remember. She visits Nina's mom, who begs her to let it go and move on. A lot of these things were unsettling, and I know it was on purpose. And this was one of the unsettling moments to me, even though it was supposed to be kind of like a comfort. It really mm-hmm. wasn't. The dismissiveness mm-hmm. of even her mom. You don't want the victim's mom to be down and like being haunted by it, but it also seemed callous at the same time. I don't know. Again, to me, it was unsettling. But she tries to get her to let go. This is kind of the moment that you see her, I think, trying to change her mind. Maybe this is not a good idea, her whole plot. She goes to Ryan and apologizes, and they start this wonderful relationship, both telling each other that they are in love. She even brings him home to meet the parents, having awkward parent moments. Everything looks good.
Mm-hmm. Madison, still unable to get a hold of Cassie, shows up at her house, desperate to know what happened after their lunch. Cassie informs her that nothing happened. Basically, she like paid this guy to take her to a hotel room and just like leave her there. Madison gives Cassie this old phone that contains a video with Nina's rape on it, explaining that it got passed around as kind of a joke. Like, everyone had seen it. I thought you had seen it. She urges Cassie not to watch it and tells her to never contact her again. Cassie watches the video, and it shows Al raping Nina with a bunch of bystanders, including Ryan, her boyfriend, laughing. So she confronts him, warning him she'll release the video if he doesn't tell her where Al is having his bachelor party. He relents and begs for forgiveness, but she does not give it to him. She arrives at the bachelor party dressed as a stripper. She drugs Al's friends and then takes Al to the bedroom, cuffing him to the bed and introducing herself as Nina Fisher. And this freaks Al out, and he starts trying to escape, saying that Nina is dead. And this is actually the first time it's confirmed to the audience, even though I'm pretty sure the whole time you're kind of like, yeah, I think I know what happened. But it's the first time it's confirmed. She begins to carve Nina's name onto his stomach, but Al escapes and suffocates her with a pillow. When his friend discovers him the next morning, they burn Cassie's body.
Right. And y'all, this was the part I was like, what's happening? I was mm-hmm. not ready. And also mm-hmm. throughout this, every time she confronts somebody, including Madison, they keep saying, we were kids. We yep. were kids. We were yep. just playing. Mm-hmm. Which we've heard that statement, and I'm pretty sure, again, it was in relation to the Kavanaugh case. And after Cassie's parents filed a missing persons report, which they did it in a way that seemed like she might just have ran away, mm-hmm. except for the mom. And along with that, the police think, okay, she's just having a bad time. So they all kind right. of chalk it up to her mental health. And Ryan, who is confronted, also agrees, because the nice guy, even though he knows something bad probably has happened, because mm-hmm. he knows where she went, he's like, oh, yeah, she was mentally off. She was not doing well, because mm-hmm. he wanted it to go away. So the nice guy, once again, it's all about him saving his own ass. So we come to Al's wedding, to yep. this gorgeous woman who we keep saying he loves. Please don't mm-hmm. tell. we suddenly see Ryan getting a text message from Cassie. During this point, I had to ask my partner, I was like, wait, can you send scheduled messages? I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, you can.
So he had to show me how to do that, y'all, in the middle, like right after the movie, because I was like, what? Wait, you can do that? So I know now.
Learning every day.
I know. It's something new every day. Mm-hmm. And it reveals that she had a contingency plan in place in case of her death. She actually sends the phone with Nina's rape to the lawyer with details about where she was going if she went missing and who did it. She leaves a half heart necklace, you know, the best friend's necklace. Did you have one of those? I had one of those.
Yeah.
With her name on it, where Gail would find it, the owner of the coffee shop. The police find the other half with Nina's name on it, where she was burned because it's all ashes. And then police arrest Al at his wedding. And Cassie's final text to Ryan is signed from her and Nina. BT Dubs, Max Greenfield from New Girl is in it. He's the one that's kind of been the catalyst. He was the one that was filming, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
The rape. He's the one that helped to call her a liar. And then he helped cover up this murder.
Yeah, he was not. I mean, most of the men for sure were not good in this.
All of them.
But he was like one of the ones where I was like, oh, I cannot stand you.
Yeah, he was purposely that frat boy that you're supposed to hate. And the whole premise was that they all went to college together, and this all happened in college. Nina went by herself to this party, and that's why Cassie feels so guilty. This is what she apologizes her to Nina's mom for. And Cassie dropped out of med school, and apparently she was at the top of the class. So was Nina, and they both dropped out because of that trauma.
Yeah. And that's, like, where the title comes from, is The Promising Young Woman. They dropped out, and, like, the dean didn't even remember, like,
either
Nina.
One of them.
Yeah, but the men, we've heard that before, of, like, The Promising Young Man. We can't ruin his life. We can't.
Right.
He's going to be, they were kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, but he's so good at XYZ. Like, why would we punish him? He's got so much promise.
Right. And the accusations come all the time. None of them really turned out to be anything, which is very untrue.
Very, very untrue. And that was one of the, like, there's so much about this that hurts because you've seen it. Especially, like, we've had these conversations play out in, like, in huge news stories. But when it comes to college campuses, like, it's just sort of a thing that is, like, maybe not accepted, but it almost accepted. Like, yeah, you should be, shouldn't wear this. You shouldn't go out this late at night. You shouldn't drink, like, because this could happen. Like, that's how much we all, like, know but don't really talk about that this happens.
Right. But that's also permanently branded into most women's minds as this could happen, this did happen, and this is the things that told me I shouldn't do, and I did it, and it's my fault. And that's how that begins. And oftentimes, because we're already culturally brainwashed by that we believe and accept it. And instead of understanding this was not my fault, this is not our fault, this is not her fault, nothing should have that type of consequence. Nothing that I do that makes myself happy, whether I do dress the way I want to that day because I feel good about myself, or the way if I want to go out to a party because I actually want to socialize, should not be equal to someone violating me. And that's that conversation. Instead of hearing that, we believe it is because people told us this it is. That makes sense.
Right. And it's just, when we did our episodes on, like, rape revenge movies, and I watched a bunch of them, probably ill-advised, but one of the ones that stuck with me was, like, they had videos of what had happened. They had videos of the sexual assault, and it didn't matter. Like, in the end, still no justice was had. So that's what I was trying to explain to you. And I was like, it's really, really bleak. There's kind of, like,
a thing at the end.
But I couldn't help but thinking, like, sure, they got this video, but they'd all seen it and passed it around and thought it was a joke and thought it was funny. Like, she probably still won't get any justice.
Right. Weirdly enough, side point, I used to love Friday Night Lights as a show, which is Connie Britton is in. She plays a school counselor, if none of you know, because this may be before your time, and that's fine. It didn't age well. Don't watch it. But one of the episodes that was one of the most disturbing episodes for me, and it involved Connie Britton. And again, she did not write this. I'm not saying she at all. I'm just saying that she was involved in the acting. The way they wrote the script, there was a an episode and they're trying to talk about drunkenness or whatever. A young cheerleader girl gets really, really drunk, so drunk that they use her as a puppet, essentially, like making fun of her and have videos. And it's just all around. And her reaction as a counselor is to bring that girl in and yell at her about, why would you do this? Are you not ashamed? Did you learn a lesson? It could have gotten worse. And it was one of the most disturbing moments of like, what? And of course, the boys did get in trouble because the football coach suspended them. So, of course, they looked like heroes in that level. But still to do that was like, not that she didn't need to be talked to. Like, she needed to be like, hey, are you okay? We want to make sure you're okay. This is happening. Be aware, blah, blah. And yeah, that's a conversation about responsibility for sure. That's not a thing. And also, drinking at a young age, hello. That's a whole different, in high school, which was so odd. But like, that was one of the episodes that really bothered me. And it, like, every time when I watched the scene with Connie Britton in this movie, that's all I could see. And I was like, yeah, this is not boding well for her.
No. And I did read an article about how Carey Mulligan's character, Cassie, essentially, like, cannot forgive, is so, like, angry. Like, you have so many scenes of her, like, if you're just going to ignore what's happening in this world, I don't know why I should submit to this world anymore. Like, this is... Right. But how the women, like, we have all these nice guys who are absolute ass, but the women also, like Madison and Connie Britton's character, Dean Walker, not supporting other women. And like, Dean Walker uses that thing that we've heard so much of, like, because at first she's like, oh, Nina, that's unfortunate, but Al was so successful and like, there's no proof, like, too bad. And then when she thinks her daughter is in danger, that's when she's like panicking, like, oh my gosh. Like, it goes from like, oh, that's so unfortunate, to this is impacting her directly. And that's something we hear a lot in these conversations, is when like, well, I have a wife, or I have a daughter, or I have a mother.
Right.
And it makes me so frustrated, because it's like, you can't, outside of that, you can't care for anybody outside of that.
Well, no, that was it. Like, again, that was also the character of Madison putting her in that situation, which, by the way, I thought that was one of the most disturbing scenes, because I was like, why would she do this? She actually setting this woman up to be raped? Oh my God, did she just hire someone to... Nowhere. Because every time I ever think, when a case happens, we've seen judges do the wrong decisions. We've seen lawyers defending and all these things. And people have written in something like, what if this happens to your daughter? I'm like, I would never want to wish that, even on my worst enemy, because that is not something to want to do that. And most of the people are like, I hope it never happens to you, but it's kind of like a very thinly veiled threat.
Yeah.
In defense of others. And that was kind of one of those moments. And I was like, I was getting anxious and angry and upset by that in itself. Mm-hmm. And I had a moment of like, please don't do this. Please don't. This is not what, even teaching a lesson. But again, until the conversation was, until she was put into that position, she could not have empathy, even today, for someone who had died due to the situation.
Yep.
And could not see it until she was in that point. And back to the Connie Britton moment, it literally, all Cassie had to say was, I left your daughter in the same room that the boys are staying, where it used to live, with a bunch of boys, and there seems to be a lot of liquor there, so good luck. That's all she said. And the dean knew immediately what could happen to her daughter. So that was all the implication, which, by the way, that also was a disturbing scene. I was very upset. I do not love movies that go after other women in general, setting up the daughter to be a victim, her calling her stupid. I know that this is just a movie and they had different ways of doing this. And I also know that Cassie wasn't supposed to be a hero. You're not supposed to like her. But it bothered me to see that. There's a lot of like back and forth about this movie. I was very hesitant in this movie in general, but like, I get it. It's very heavy-handed. As a person who has gone through trauma, you and myself, it's a lot to take in. Even talking about it makes me a little anxious. It's a lot to take in, but seeing that too, it was an added ouch. Not that it's not reality, not that it can't happen. It just was like, wow. Do we really have to take that extra step, though, of, like, calling a young girl stupid? And I'm sure it was an added dig because that was said about Nina. She was dumb for doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like a lot of the things I read were, you know, she's just so, by what happened, she's so traumatized and so angry that everyone's telling her to move on and she can't move on. And it is impacting her. Like, you see, like, pretty much every person in her life is worried about Kathy.
Right.
It's like, this is not healthy, what you are doing. And they don't even know about, like, her nighttime...
Right.
Like, job.
Right.
So it's not healthy, and people are worried about her. And I think she just, like, lashes out and is so full of anger about it. Yeah. And it is, like, it's heavy-handed, but it's also, like, unfortunate how often I was like, yeah, I've heard this before. It starts pretty, like, punches flying with these, like, three guys at a bar.
Right.
Who are, like, see Cassie, who's acting very, very drunk, and talking, like, amongst themselves, like, boy talk. Like, you know, they put themselves in danger. She's kind of hot. Just asking for it. Like, having this conversation.
Right. Well, you know, I would go a step further. The intro with the dancing, you're immediately uncomfortable because the dancing was interesting.
Yes.
I don't know if the choreographer was like, just do some gyrating silly moves that make women uncomfortable and go for it. And that's the focus that we see. We see average men trying to be sexy or funny in their drunken state. And it automatically, it definitely put me back to, oh yeah, I've seen that. And it made me uncomfortable, made me walk away. You get that from the shots, from the angles immediately. That's where you come into, to the three guys talking, and Brody being the nice guy trying to rescue her away from these two awful dudes, my coworkers. And it even begins to have the conversation about a woman who had told them a concern about the meetings and how it's going, and all of them saying she's just overreacting, she just needs to keep up. Like, it jumps into how they already dismiss women in the workplace, except for Adrian Bodie, who's like, y'all, maybe we should talk to her. I'm going to be the good guy. We should. She's not wrong. We should defend her. Like, trying to overplay that character.
This movie was coming after a lot of people, but I was definitely nice, guys. You did not come out looking good on the other side, kind of pretty quickly. As you said, the casting was purposeful about Hollywood nice guys. But yeah, like that whole, like, oh, I'm going to save her. And then so quickly, Brody's character was like, well, would you like to come to my apartment?
Right.
Like,
switches
it goes
it up.
Very, very quickly from like, oh, I'm going to rescue you in heavy quotes to, actually, my apartment's right here. Would you like to come up? And then
more
drinks. To
more
drinks when she's like acting so wasted. And then trying to have sex with her when she clearly cannot consent. I also think, like, there are certain things that I'm always like, I might be just projecting my own stuff on this. But I feel like her whole relationship with Ryan, who, I don't know how you felt, Samantha, but I was immediately like, this is not going to end well. I don't know why or how, but this guy's not good either.
I did predict that he was going to be in the video. He was a part of it.
Yeah, when she brought out the video, I was like, oh no, But, like, the friendships, that idea that, like, these friendships are always, like meant to be something else, that he always just wanted to date her. And like I said, I believe in platonic, like, relationships with different genders. But I feel like a lot of times when we see this, it does feel this way. I've had that experience a lot. So I thought that was interesting. Yeah, that whole conversation about not wanting to ruin this nice guy's life. So many of them, like you said, they had all of these excuses when they were caught. They were like, oh, well, but I'm a nice, I think even one of them said that, but I'm a nice guy. I'm a nice guy.
Yeah. The dude who was trying to get her to do coke.
Yes.
McLovin.
Yes.
Yes. I just called him McLovin. I know that's not his name.
Yes. Yes. But that was one of the things, like the ending when she like slowly gets suffocated. The next day, Al, who suffocated her, was like, it was an accident. I was like, are you kidding me? You, for so long.
Yeah. At the same time, he's saying, you did this. This is your fault.
Yes.
Would stop. Stop breathing. Stop moving. You did this. So that's not an accident.
No. And it like, that was the part I was like, I knew she was going to die. I did not know it was going to be so long.
Yeah.
And like, that is not an accident.
No. And then also the burning scene with her hand sticking out. I was like, that's okay. I guess that's just to verify, yes, you're seeing what you're seeing level. And then the callousness of that.
Yeah.
In general.
Because they were so ready to just throw her away and cover it up.
Right. That she mattered so little as a human in general. Mm-hmm. And that was obviously the intent of that story. And that she kind of expected it was the other part to that.
Yeah. It's disturbing. There were also a lot of like, especially with Madison, because Madison was sort of Madison, Nina, and Cassie were friends. Madison saw this video, was the one who was ready to be like, you know, oh, she was sleeping around, she was getting drunk, like, no one's going to believe you. She had twins, she would always talk about them. She makes this, like, joke to Cassie, like, oh, you don't have kids, you'll get there. Like, this whole, like, one day you'll move on and you'll be, you know, happy as, like, me, because this is what happiness looks like. So there was a lot of stuff like that. I did take note of the whole, like, ladies' night pouring Cassie a huge drink when she's already drunk. I have always felt wary of that. That whole idea, to me, is, like, it's basically, like, you're trying to get more women into a place, get them drunk, so men can pick them up.
Right. And that brings the men in, though. That is a ploy to bring men. They don't have problems bringing men in. Like, that's, I think, a sitcom joke. In order to get men into a bar, you bring more women. And the only way to get women is to give them drinks or free things, free admission. Same thing with clubs. They do free admission for women, like they have that up until 12 a.m., free for women. Like that's, and I went to a couple of those clubs before when I was young. And it exactly is a hunting ground, essentially, for predatory men.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to one once where it was like women four drinks free. And I was like, four drinks? Four drinks? But yeah, it was throughout the movie of like using alcohol as a weapon. And like obviously Cassie's whole thing is she pretends to be drunk to see what like these nice guys will pick her up. I went to a ladies' night in Hong Kong and I definitely got, something was put in my drink and I was hospitalized.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah. It hits so quickly. Like I went from being like fine to very much not fine within like an hour. And it's just frightening because it's sort of the, like we were talking about, like that's just a threat that you face, like being out and about in the world. And I definitely had, like, because you keep seeing these instances of them trying to have sex with her when she is, you know, supposed to be, looks very, very drunk, like very, very drunk. And I remember once this guy, I threw up all over him and he was still like, still want to have sex? I was like, no, I'm good. I'll be leaving now. Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And then this is also like, I don't know that this is true. I want to stress this, but this is what the level we're talking about is there was a rumor at the school that I went to that every year this fraternity, and it was sort of like notorious, like that's the not safe one. Don't go to that one. They would choose a girl and get her really, really drunk and then lock her in this glass trophy case. And then the next morning, like take pictures and video of her. And it was sort of like a thing, like, you don't want to be the trophy girl. But, like, that whole idea of because a lot of the guys in this kind of talk about it like a game, or they laugh about it. And that was just like a real thing that we told each other on campus.
I mean, I'm betting there's a basis to that for sure, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Recently, and it's a little different today when we talk about these cases, kind of like the ones that happened for Tanina in this movie, we do see specific areas or rooms, or as you talk, like fraternities who are known and have a reputation. As recently, like I've seen TikToks of students trying to do takedowns of specific fraternities because the school would not handle it. So therefore, mm-hmm. they would organize protests in front of these frats and fraternities. And it's interesting to see, because I think I saw at least like two or three different schools where they talked about a specific organization, a specific fraternity, fraternal order, who was known for throwing parties where women were constantly date raped, and therefore they would stage protests in front of it because that's all they could do. And that was the only way they could get any kind of attention and justice for the victims. So we don't have much of that in play, other than that's how Cassie's stalking the individuals and their information. But like, that's a newer thing that's having to come by to try to get justice. Recently, I just saw a tweet from a woman who was told her case may not make it into, even though she did everything correctly. She immediately reported to the police. She immediately gave evidence. She immediately got an exam, all the things. And because of that, she went to Twitter and she just named the names and went all the way down. And it brought up a huge, like, why are you telling us? Why aren't you going to the police? And then she's like, I did, but nothing mm-hmm. is happening. So here you go. And I want you to know who this is. And I want you to know what happened to me. And I'm not going to sit this. I'll tell you how it's ruined my life. And it's currently ruining my life. And I find it fascinating today, like, as we were talking about how big of a change social media has made, whether it's good or bad, but it has, because women are starting to, with the Me Too movement, which is, she said, is starting to gather courage from seeing others speak out. But I found that fascinating to, like, the differences in this and whether or not they could have turned to that route about social media, which I thought would be what was going to happen about that tape, to be honest. I thought she was going to post it.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, we've talked about that in the power of those movements on social media and things like Twitter, where it's impacted you whether you use it or not.
Right.
But it's just such a shame that that's like what it takes. And that like, because it's not easy to share that stuff.
No.
Yeah. It's a huge, powerful movement, but I hate that it requires kind of this, like, well, none of these other things have worked, so here's right. my story. And hopefully it'll prevent it from happening to you at this place or what have you.
Right. I mean, that's the other part, is they're naming names so women will be aware who did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
My favorite right now is them finding Brock Turner and blasting it every time he tries to go somewhere.
Oh, gosh.
And how he changed his name or changed his appearance. Women are like, yeah. Hey, Brock Turner is in this area. Be aware. I love it.
That case and Brett Kavanaugh were definitely shining through the story mm-hmm. in this one, I would say. Mm-hmm. One of the lines that stuck out to me, and we've heard variations of this line, was, you know, it's every guy's worst nightmare getting accused like that, which is what Al says. And Cassie says back, can you guess what every woman's worst nightmare is? But yeah, that like very clear, stark gender difference. I thought it was also pretty telling, as you were saying earlier, like when Dean Walker immediately is like, oh, this is dangerous. My daughter is in this room. There's alcohol and men. And Cassie has a comment about like, oh, she's safer than we were at your school. Like your daughter is. But also that whole idea of, yeah, like dropping out from med school after this experience, losing women in our workforce or whatever it is, or losing lives because of this trauma and because it's going ignored or even mocked. And then, you know, like trying to paint the picture of who was lost, because so many times I feel like it's like, oh, well, another statistic sexual assault is bad and we forget who the victim is and like, or the survivor is. And you see that throughout this of Cassie trying to be like, remember Nina? Nina did this and she was like this and she was this. It was so much and we lost her because of this. So that was there. It's like, it's strange for me to say I did write down friendship because, you know, Cassie and Nina were very close, but we never see their friendship. We just kind of hear about it and we see what Cassie does in her name. Don't know.
Well, we do also see that they've been together for so long and the guilt of her not being with Nina holds her. Like, not only, of course, her death is going to affect her, but she blames herself for letting her be in that situation or like not being with her to get her out of that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like those kind of like ripple effects of those traumatic events of how it impacts people in your life. And I did want to, before we talk about the ending real quick, I did want to bring up something else that I'd forgotten about that you reminded me of was when Carey Mulligan was cast, there was all this like backlash of, oh, she's not hot enough for this role.
Right. Right. It was such an absurd conversation because they were like, someone like Margot Robbie, she's the one that should be doing this. And it was during this time, I remember Carey Mulligan came out and spoke out about it and had a whole article written about it because someone, like, articles were written that she was not pretty enough and she could not get away with this, which is a whole different conversation. I'm like,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't take much to get men into these positions. And I'm not trying to be callous or I'm not trying to be insulting. It really is about a lot of the, in this specific line of going to a club to meet a woman to go and spend the night with. I'm sorry. Like, I think it's just such a funny level of comparison. Like, have you not known normal, not Hollywood women going home with people? But this also is the same damn narrative. She wasn't pretty enough. Why would she be raped?
Right.
Put beside the point that Carey Mulligan is a Oscar-winning Hollywood actress, gorgeous Hollywood actress, who has played leading ladies for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So it was such an absurdity to me that they had to be like, she has to be a blonde bombshell to play this character, which is just essentially taking men home while they're drunk. Or being taken home by men who want a drunk, inebriated, unconscious woman half the time for their physical purpose. Like, it's just, it's kind of like, what do you think this is? I don't understand. There's so many things in this narrative that is so insulting to every woman in general, and also every victim in general, that it just seems so ridiculous that that was the critique to this movie.
Yeah, that is a disgusting, harmful narrative. And we've talked about it before on the show. So, check that out. And then, yeah, just to briefly talk about the ending, because this was the big thing everybody kept kind of hinting at for me. It was like, oh, the ending. It is, it's really rough. I think the scene, like how quickly Al and his friend go from like, oh, she's dead. Oh, this is not your fault. It's okay. Let's just burn the body. No, everyone will forget about her. Yeah, he keeps saying, oh, it's not your fault. You're going to be fine. And, you know, Al thinks, oh, I'm going to have this happy life. I'm going to get married. No one's going to know about it. Because he's counting on, like, nobody investigated with Nina who would investigate this person. And so it was kind of like, you know, it's still like a dark, grim ending. It was pretty satisfying that he got arrested at his wedding. I was hoping more people would get arrested.
Right. But can we also talk about the wedding ceremony of the white people doing that? And I know it was a joke and it was a play on, I think it's a play on the crunchy movement. I don't know if you know what that is. The TikTok level, that's what how I know it. But I'm thinking that's what that is. The white women doing a drum session.
Right.
I know this was supposed to be. And it was. Like, it was such a bleak moment to laugh. You're like, what is happening? What is happening? Am I supposed to laugh here? Because I don't want to laugh right now. But that's what we see. And then him getting arrested. And also, I think there's also that conversation, and I may be reading too much into it, because when Al says the stripper is dead, he never says who she is. So yep. Joe doesn't know who she is, and he's like, she's just a stripper. No one's going to know.
Right. Yep.
Not realizing who she was. And I don't know mm-hmm. if it's ever said to him. Like, mm-hmm. we know Al knows. We know Al knows that he knows Nina. He doesn't know who she is. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, he does know, because she said, you don't remember me. He's mm-hmm. like, I must have not been on your radar or whatever. Oh, you do remember me, after he says, you're Nina's friend. Mm-hmm. But he never says that to Joe. And I think that's that huge dismissiveness in other levels, like the talking about sex work and what we need to talk about and how invisible they can be treated yeah. and dismissed as human as well. So there's so many underlying things to that. Again, mm-hmm. I may be reading too much into it, but I think there's that conversation too. And men in power dismissing women in specific employments or careers yeah. and therefore feeling like they can and they are untouchable and they have the right to dismiss them as such.
Yeah. I definitely got that same vibe. Like how quickly they were like, oh, let's just burn the body. Like that, oof, it's like, he didn't even think to, like, that was, like, the first thing. He was like, oh, let's just burn the body because it right. doesn't matter. She doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, I know this wasn't really the point, but it did crack me up how quickly they went from, did anybody order a stripper, to, oh, it's a stripper. Who cares? Right. Like, we don't care who ordered, like, whatever. Right. Like, oh,
I'm
okay.
Assuming. Oh, yeah, she's definitely yes. here. Let's go.
Yes. And then I did want to touch on really briefly that whole thing at the end where everybody's kind of blaming Cassie's mental health. And like I said, like she, for her disappearance, like, oh, she wasn't doing well, whatever. But it felt like the cops were so ready to be like, yeah, let's just mark it off the list. She wasn't doing well, right? Kind of these leading questions. And like I said, like she isn't doing well. But I think that was part of the point, was everybody kept telling her to move on from this like horrific thing, and she couldn't. And she like couldn't just ignore that this had happened or ignore that this is the world we live in. And she's getting told like, that's just how it is. And she couldn't. And so I thought that was interesting. I read a couple articles about that and how like they were so quick to blame the mental health, but they would just so readily like, but this actually happened and this was an issue, and of course she's traumatized from it.
Right.
Yeah.
I think in that regards, and we talked about this in previous episodes, I think when I first started, when we see people using mental health and weaponizing mental health when it comes to the gender difference, is they blame mental health for women's downfall while mm-hmm. they blame mental health for a man who is violent and are hurting others. So it's such a right. whole different level of mm-hmm. who is doing what, to the same effect of like, well, if you're saying that he is mentally unstable, that's why he gunned down an entire school. Mm-hmm. And that's the excuse that we should forgive him or something, as to where, well, this woman died or got killed because she was not healthy.
Right.
Wait, what? Like, it's just, mm-hmm. it's the opposite effect in what we see in this conversation, and what we use and weaponize and how we weaponize it, whether it's for or against.
Right.
And it's very interesting conversation, because one's an excuse and one's the reason. And it's kind of that level of, here we go again. We see this happen all the time, and this is a prime example of this. And we've seen that with the missing and murdered Indigenous women, that oftentimes their mental health, or if drug use is involved, or anything that they can scrape up to say this is why she's gone and it's her fault, instead right. of finding a reason instead of finding the fact that she's a victim here and we need to do everything we can do to find them, mm-hmm. is that same stark difference here to me as well. I also wanted to point out, when they were talking to Bo Burnham's character, Ryan, they kept thanking him. where you're honest. You can't be lying to me. You're such an upstanding citizen. You're doing such a great job. Oh, yeah, she was so mentally off. Almost like thanking him for caring for her. It was almost like he was doing this out of pity. So there's so many things to that level. Like, oh my God, what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was like he was the victim for having to put up with her and her issues.
Right.
And heavy quotes. But yeah, you're so right. Because when it's women, it's your fault. All of these things, the mental health, the drugs, whatever it is. With men, we're much more likely to be like, well, it's not his fault. It's like everybody else's fault, but not his fault. And that's what was playing out with the sexual assault too. Whereas instead, they're essentially telling her to move on, to accept that this is the world we live in, we can't do any better. And she's so angry about it, rightfully. Yeah. I mean, a lot to talk about for sure. It is a rough one. I recommend it, but be in the right mind space.
Right.
Prepare yourself.
Get your healing movie after the fact.
Get your comedy.
I think I immediately texted you. I was like, I have to watch a romantic comedy or something now. Thank you. To the listeners, we always love your suggestions and thank you. But yes, I'm just kind of mad at you.
It's all right, listeners. You're in the same boat as me. Yes. Thank you for sending those suggestions. Thanks to everybody who suggested this. If you would like to send us more suggestions or if you have any thoughts about this, you can email us at stephaniamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok at Stuff I Never Told You. Thanks as always to our super producer, Christina.
Thank you, Christina.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.